Well, I have lots to work on. And here I thought I'd been in therapy for 5.5 years. I should be good to go. But clearly, there's still, of course, making sure that I have my own back, making some clear values, what I'm expecting out of men that I want to date, being more specific with some of that. Well, there's quite a bit with the trust and mistrust and the fear of abandonment and emotional deprivation, stuff like that. Those are all things that I can work on, you know, that are tangible things that I can do.
This is episode number 598. We are almost 600 episodes into this podcast in our 11th season. And I'm so excited today because I am doing another live coaching session with a stranger. I don't know Beth. She contacted me to be able to be coached on the show. And I'm really excited to talk to her. We're going to be talking about what type of work people need in order to find love, to have a good relationship. And it's a fantastic question. We're going to learn more about Beth in just a minute. But in the meantime, I just wanted to welcome you back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. I am Sandy Weiner, and I've written two books to support you on your journey to lasting love. The first one is Becoming a Woman of Value: How to Thrive in Life and Love. This book was written because I saw so many people who really didn't know their worth and didn't really value themselves enough. And I think one of the first steps in doing the work is knowing your value, knowing your values. And there's so much in this book, many, many exercises, 30 of them, in fact, and lots of stories and even interviews from my podcast. The second book is Choice Points in Dating. And this book was written because so many people feel they don't have choices, that we're kind of born this way, or we don't really know how to date, who to date. We have choices along the way. How long to stay? That's something we're going to actually be covering today. How long do you stay in a relationship? When is it time to go? And how do you know it's your last first date? Both of these books are available on Amazon for Kindle and paperback. And today's tip on becoming a woman of value is step number five, which is own your beauty. Everybody has a different type of beauty, but many of us don't feel beautiful, especially as we age and we start looking at little wrinkles and flaws and sagginess and all kinds of things that happen. But the honest truth is that we are beautiful at every stage and every age, and we often miss the opportunity to really value the beauty that we have. We look back 5 years later and go, wow, I wish I could have appreciated how beautiful I was then. I remember finding pictures that a friend of mine had taken, Polaroid pictures, actually, that's how long ago it was, when we were probably 20, and they were gorgeous. Like, I did not think I had a good body then. And I look back and I go, oh my God, our bodies were amazing and we did not appreciate them. And so appreciate every stage, appreciate your beauty. Before I bring on Beth, I just want to invite you to join my Facebook group. Beth is a member. It's called Your Last First Date. And we are a unique group. I think Beth will agree. There are so many groups out there that, God, I mean, I'm a member of many of them. And it's like, look at how these men are horrible. Oh, could you believe this? And they'll post screenshots of conversations and their profiles. And it's just like a hate on men fest. And that isn't going to help you find love, in my opinion. What will help you is clear guidance, boundaries, ways to grow. I'm live in the group every single weekend. I post so many things in this group. Plus, we have amazing monitors who keep this group safe and sane and also post daily. And it's just a really highly engaging group. So join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Beth. Beth, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandy. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited that you were brave enough to write in and to answer the call for guests. I love coaching live on the show. We've never met, and so this is all new to me. So tell us a
And me
little
too.
bit. Yeah. Tell us how old you are, what's
Okay.
your relationship status, why
Sure.
did you write into the show?
Okay. Well, I am 54 years old and my relationship status is, it's complicated. No, I have been divorced for about 5.5 years now, and I've had two very long-term relationships that ended poorly. As you know, have taught, you learn a lesson from each one, and I've taken it on to the next. I've had many short-term relationships that kind of just fizzled out. But this last round of dating, I really wanted to have dating with intention. And so I really had some qualities that I wanted men to have, values, you know, similar to mine. And if it didn't work out, I would just, you know, end it right there. Whereas in the past, I would be like, oh, he's nice. He's got this quality, and go on from there. So I really made a point to do it with intention, what I thought. So I did find a gentleman with similar values, a very nice man, kind, great communicator, just good quality. And the attraction was minimal. And, you know, I've always had relationships in the past where it was like on fire, that chemistry where it was just, it was hot. And as you know, not always a great sign when it's like that. It can mean some other things might be going on. So I'm aware of that now. So I said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to go through the process and I'm going to really get to know this man and keep it more of on a friendship type basis until I'm sure. And it did grow a little bit, but it never really got to the point where I feel like I want to just be with him for the rest of my life. And so I did break things off with him. But I am now really having some hesitancy. Since I've broken it off, I have just, it's not so much just this intense feeling of, not only do I miss him, but it's, I feel like I'm not sure exactly how to tell all of what I feel, but it's not so much because I'm lonely. I have a very fulfilling life, great friends and great activities, and I'm okay being by myself. So I feel like I'm at a good place for dating, but I did break things off. So then, you know, did I do it too quickly? I mean, is this something that could grow because he's such a good man? One of his biggest things for me was he's very overweight, and I'm a very healthy, conscious person. So it's something that's not attractive to me. So I really thought that I could get over it, but it kept being a point for me that was an issue. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I do see a therapist, and you know, I've discussed this with him, and he, you know, he keeps saying, well, maybe you just need some time without dating, you know, to work on you. And you know, you can always work on you. I feel like there's always something you can improve. But at the same time, okay, well, I've been in therapy since my divorce, so what else can I do? You know? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, so thanks for sharing all of that.
Sure.
I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about all the things that you mentioned, but I wanted to back up a little bit. When you said the other long-term relationships ended poorly,
mm-hmm.
what did that look like?
One of them, he was a chronic liar, just habitual liar. And I didn't find out until about a year and a half in that every single thing that he told me was a lie. So it, and I truly loved that man. So it was crushing. Honestly, that was the hardest breakup that I've had in my life, even over my 24-year marriage. The other long-term relationship, it was just, he was very avoidant, and he had some very unhealthy boundaries with his ex-wife, that kept causing issues after issues. So we would break up And then he'd say, no, I'll make these changes. And he'd make the changes for a little bit, and then he'd slip back in. So it just kept going and kept going. So we eventually did break up, but it was about a 2.5 year relationship. And, you know, it was something I learned a lot from. You know, that was my very first relationship after my divorce. And he kind of helped me through that whole divorce process and what to expect. So I, you know, each one of them were good men, and I appreciate the lessons learned. They just weren't the right ones.
Well, the first one, chronic liar, took a year and a half for you to learn that. How did you find that out?
Because he had a brain tumor. I'm a nurse. So I, worked with him to get this taken care of, get a nurse surgeon. And he went and actually had a craniotomy where it was removed. And I do honestly believe during that process, he lost the ability to lie and it came out. And then it just kept going back and forth. And I found out through his mother that most everything he told me was a lie. And to give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt, I'm hopeful it was the tumor causing that, as it was in the frontal lobe, which controls that type of behavior. But I don't know. I mean, he could have very well been a sociopath.
My question is, do you have a tendency to give a lot of chances to people?
Yes. Yes, I am very much a people pleaser and believe people do have the right to have a second chance. So definitely. And I've always had trouble with boundaries. It's something I continue to work on, setting boundaries and knowing it's to protect me, not being rude. So, yeah.
So part of this is the work, is the learning the difference between being kind to people and being a doormat, being kind and giving too many chances. And I'm feeling like the giving too many chances is coming up again with this new man, because you were pretty clear that this wasn't working. One of your values is health, and he is not healthy. So that brings me to your must-have list. What is on it?
I really am looking for somebody with integrity, you know, who is going to do good no matter what. And also, you know, I feel like I've never had anyone, any man in my life that I felt secure enough with, who I felt like had my back. And that's ultimately what I'm looking for. Somebody who is an honest man. Is one of the biggest, but there's also, you know, I do have other, of course, you know, superficial ones. It's important to me to have somebody who's healthy and who has similar beliefs in that, you know, we're in control of that. Yes, we age and stuff, but we can do it gracefully and we can do it to prolong our lives as opposed to, you know, being gluttonous, I guess, would be the best way to say it. You know, it's just not an appealing trait to me. So it's something that's, it's hard because I feel there's so much more to a person than their physical looks. So I struggle with that with him, because I've never given him the chance to say, hey, yeah, you're right, Beth. I could do some work on that. So, you know, that's not fair either. He doesn't even really understand the real reason, you know?
What did you tell him when you ended it?
You know, at this stage, I feel like I should have deeper feelings for you, and it's not there yet. But my therapist said, you know, you gotta kind of handle it with grace and compassion. And, you know, so it was what I said was along the lines of, you know, I think I may have jumped into this a little bit too soon, that I really do need some work on myself, that, you know, in order to give myself 100%, I have to do some work. And that could very well be the truth, you know, in that I probably have built up some walls because of these men that have treated me poorly, that caused some issues, you know, for any man, I would say, you know, at one point, I think this last gentleman that I've been dating, he asked me, you know, what would you say is one of your red flags? And I said, well, I don't have red flags. I may have yellow flags, but the biggest one is, you know, the fact of my traumas with men in the past. I have a hard time being vulnerable now.
It is hard to trust when you don't know exactly what caused you to fall for men who didn't have integrity, who lied, who were avoidant, who had unhealthy boundaries. And so, you know, what I'm hearing over and over too is you come in and then you're fixing, right? You're going to fix the guy without boundaries because maybe he could have better boundaries if I only give him that chance. And the guy who's the liar is a liar. I mean, that was just, you know, unfortunate that you didn't see it right away, because it's hard to know what people are lying about and what they're not. But I think part of you just wants to belong and to be loved. And it's easy to ignore and abandon yourself when you're with these men because the attraction is strong. Mm-hmm. And so when the attraction is not strong, like with this last guy, he was a nice guy. He had good communication. He was kind. He had integrity. There are a lot of nice people who you will not fall in love with. There is a tendency to go from dangerous dating to safe dating. And they're both extremes. So in order to find the center, you can't abandon the things that are most important. And I think your must-have list has to become a little bit more intentional. I think that's part of the work. Really understanding your attachment style and who you're attracted to and why. Also, your own temperament and the temperament of the people that are in your life and how they fit with you. And the last thing is your core limiting beliefs, the beliefs that we all have about ourselves that limit us, because people pleasing is one of them. It's the term for it is subjugation. And these all come from childhood. So we'll go through each of these and then we'll work on your list when we're done. And your values are really important. So there's so many aspects, but those are really right. The key parts of work. And once you identify the most important things and your values and the things that are important to you, then you learn how to speak up about the things that bother you and hurt you from the start. The things you have questions about, you don't just dismiss. You talk about them, you set boundaries around things that are important to you, and then you hold fast to those boundaries. That's kind of in a nutshell, like what the work is. It's a lot. We're not going to cover everything today. but this is the kind of work I do with my clients. Like, we look at your past and the love blueprint, how you came to be who you are today, why we are attracted to the people we are. It's hard not to be attracted to those people, but we can rewire our brains for attraction and we can learn to show up differently. So if we're having hard conversations from the start and we're asking questions that we may have been afraid to ask, those are all ways to improve our communication so that we can know from the start, is this person on the same page? Does this person have the ability to be in integrity with me? Can we grow together? Just to also go back to, can attraction grow? Attraction can grow with the right person when there is, I would say, on a scale of 1 to 10, there's at least a 5 to begin with. But this isn't just about attraction. What you're talking about is a value of yours that is not being met. The value of fitness, the value of health. You take care of your body. Often when people are severely overweight, there are other things at play, whether this person is eating emotionally because they're not expressing emotionally. There could be so many other things underlying why this person isn't motivated to take care of themselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a complicated thing. And I'm not putting down people who are overweight, but I'm saying that there is an intentionality that's important to you and that is important for you to be aligned with in a partner.
He is definitely like active though. He, you know, he does work out and he is willing to go hiking with me. You know, every weekend we would go hiking and stuff. So it's not like he, you know, sits on the couch and eats bonbons or anything like that. Okay. He he is aware of that, but he is overweight, morbidly obese, probably. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things, like, I don't know if you, to me, if someone told me, you know, something along those lines, like, Beth, you need to lose, you know, 10 or 15 pounds, I would take, it would hurt. I mean, it would hit hard, but I would probably do something about it. So I don't know at what point that's a harsh subject. And some people take that really badly. If, you know, do you say something or do you not? Do I move on, I guess, is the way that I looked at it.
What would be important is to know if that's the only thing, because I have a feeling it's not. You know, attraction is dependent on many things, on personality, on charm, on how a person shows up for you, so many things. And given your history of dating people who are emotionally not the right people for you, your attraction is for more dangerous people.
Mm-hmm.
So right. Part of this could be the hard wiring, that you need to change your wiring, and maybe you will eventually fall for somebody who is not dangerous and is safer and feels more attractive to you, you know, without even bringing the weight issue into the mix, because there are plenty of people. I mean, a friend of mine was telling me about a guy she was dating, and she said, he's the nicest guy. I just find him to be so unattractive. And I said, well, tell me more about him. She goes, well, he's really boring too. And I said, so he's not right for you. So she goes, but he's so nice. And I think it's really rare to find nice men. Well, that's because she was married to a really abusive, emotionally abusive man. And she doesn't think niceness is common. So she goes, is it so bad to be with somebody boring? I said, that's for you to figure out. But I personally, like, it's the conversations we have every day. It's the fact that you want to have a million conversations with this person that's going to make you want to be with them. Not the fact that, you know, he's nice. That's not enough. So let's back up now and let's talk about your love blueprint, the way that your parents were your parents divorced, married?
My parents are married. They still are. 64 okay. years, I think, this coming year. They are very loving. I think as I grew up, my family, I have two older sisters, my like 7 years older and 5 years older, and then my brother is 3 years younger. And my brother and I were kind of like the second family. And the first family, you know, may have gotten a different treatment than what my brother and I did. They were kind of more career oriented. And I played sports. So my dad, you know, I did get quite a bit of attention from my father. But a lot of times I think they were more just into themselves than my brother and I.
Yeah, no, avoidant. That just dinged for me, the avoidant that you were attracted to. You were used to people not being really there. They were kind of in their own, doing their own thing.
Right. My parents, you know, post-divorce have been the most supportive people there are. I couldn't have gotten through everything without them. So it's, you know, they changed too, you know, throughout life.
Yeah, so, that's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the culture in your family was that marriage was important. Obviously, they stayed married a long time. Who had the power in their relationship?
My father did. Yeah, he was the disciplinarian, and whatever he said went. And, you know, he had a pretty stressful position. So at times, you know, we would have to be, you know, walking on eggshells or be very quiet, make sure everything was nice and clean and picked up so he wouldn't, you know, blow his temper. He did have a temper at times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I can see some of that, you know, where my anxious attachment style came from, from definitely my childhood and my marriage too.
Yeah. And the people pleasing comes from
people pleasing. Yeah. That's my whole family. My mother's a people pleaser, you know, and I feel I just grew up just like her, you know. What can I do to help you in your life? Kind of person.
Yeah. So helping people is lovely. And if it's at the cost of your own needs and your own authenticity, it's not okay. Your parents were very involved in their own life, not because they didn't love you, but because they were busy doing whatever they needed to do. Yeah. And as a result, you learned to take care of yourself, but also you were always kind of worried about the other shoe dropping and you didn't want to have your father blow a gasket. So you did the right things to be, to belong in your family.
Right.
And you're continuing to do that in your relationships. So that's where the love blueprint comes in. And we all have it. We all have this, but we can change it. So you said anxiously attached, and you've been attracted to avoidance in the past, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately you want to find more securely attached relationships.
Right.
And, but there is that pull that somebody who is not needy, clingy is going to be more attractive than somebody who might be. And, you know, these people echo the family of origin, and then you're trying to somehow get the love and the attention you didn't get as a child through these partners, which is impossible. And
right.
So there's the fixing. There's the, if I only say the right thing, do the right thing, then they're somehow going to become the right partner, and they don't. And so really,
right.
when we fall in love, we want to fall in love with the person exactly how they are and who they are right now. Because once you go in trying to tweak whatever it is that they are, including asking somebody to lose a lot of weight, it's setting you up for failure from the start, right? I mean, people have personalities, right? They're all going to come with their own set of their background, their love blueprint, their attachment style, and they can make small shifts. Like, we can shift habits, but we can't shift personality and temperament.
Right.
I had a guest recently on the podcast, Michelle Skeen, and she wrote the book, Why Can't I Let You Go? And it's all about trauma bonds and toxic relationships. And she breaks down the core limiting beliefs. And those are the things that hold us back. I'll go through all of them really quickly. The first one is abandonment. Many people have this core belief. We're afraid of rejection. We're afraid that somebody's going to let us down, leave us. Where on a scale of 1 to 10, would you say abandonment is a core belief for you?
10 being high?
Yeah, 10 being high.
I would say it's a way up there. 7, 8.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happens when you are afraid of being rejected is, again, you can abandon yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So we then people please, then we become something else. We are a chameleon. We will do anything to make that person love us, even though it may not be the right relationship. Recognizing that fear of abandonment might have kept you too long in relationships is a really important step. The next one, and this might also be true for you, I think, mistrust and abuse. So this is where you're afraid to trust people. It sounded like that came up a little earlier in our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And you think people might hurt you. How do you trust, right? So if you've been hurt in the past, where on a scale of 1 to 10 is this one for you?
It's high. 8 out of 10, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And then this one, I think, is also going to come up pretty high for you. It's called emotional deprivation. And it's, again, in childhood, if you weren't tended to emotionally in the ways that you needed, the way you were describing your childhood, it was a lot of doing. It was a lot of, if I'm a good girl, I'll be accepted. If I do really well in school and sports, I will get the love I need. And so that creates emotional deprivation in childhood. And then the way it looks in romantic relationships is you can feel really disconnected from people. You can have a deficit of emotional needs met, and you can feel really lonely in a relationship. On a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think that falls?
Probably 7 out of 10.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next one is defectiveness. And that is where you blame yourself for not being loved enough. Maybe in childhood, it's my fault that my parents didn't love me enough. Maybe in relationships, you have the same thing. You carry shame. You worry that your faults will be exposed. For a lot of people, it could be a physical defect too, for some people, but they carry shame about their faults, their so-called perceived faults. Where on a scale of 1 to 10 is that for you?
There's some of it, but I feel a lot of it. That's one thing through my therapy that I've been able to help myself with. So I would say like 5 or 6 out of that.
Okay.
I'm able to be, you know, logically, I think, through some of that.
Okay, good. And the next one's dependence. And so that one is when you grow up in a family where you're not taught to be self-reliant. You're taught to rely on your parents for everything. And then you get into relationships where you rely on your partner, end up in codependent relationships. Scale of 1 to 10 on dependence.
Okay. There's the same thing for that. That's something, you know, that I, you know, during my marriage, possibly very high number, but since then through therapy, I would say about 5 out of 10, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I had a feeling. And then the last one is failure. And that's a need to be perfect. You feel like a failure. You compare yourself to other people. You feel less than. You feel like you're not doing enough. You're not measuring up. A scale of 1 to 10, where is that?
That's low for me. It really is. I don't, and even with the relationships, I don't see it as a failure. You know, it's a lesson learned. I would say maybe 2 out of 10.
Okay. Oh, very low. Okay. So the top ones are subjugation, the people pleasing, putting other people first. That's a big one. And abandonment, fear of abandonment. And mistrust and abuse, worldly mistrust, I would say, and emotional deprivation. Those are the big ones for you.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So we all carry these, and the way to work through them is to think about what you do when you fear abandonment. Think about what you do when you don't trust. And so a lot of us self-sabotage. Like when we're afraid of abandonment, we become people pleasers. When we're afraid that we can't trust somebody, we put walls up, right? Those are coping mechanisms. And so learning different ways to cope by saying, okay, I don't trust easily, but what will I do differently this time? So you mentioned dating with intentionality. That's a great thing to do. It's a really important thing to do. But what does that look like? And so I heard part of your list. Tell me a little bit more about dating with intentionality and what that looks like for you.
Well, it more this time was like the first date. Most people are pretty nervous. I'm actually very, I think it's just because of my profession. I'm able to make people feel a little bit at ease. So, you know, the first date though is you just don't get that true feeling for the person. So, you know, if they ask me for a second date, I always give them a second date. So then that's where I feel like I can really get an idea of where they're at, who they are, what are their goals? Are they matching with mine? Their values, you know, and every now and then I'll throw in a question about, you know, just to check integrity type of thing, because it's important to me. It's super important. I want to know that it's a man that I can trust. And of course, you know, people can lie and mislead you, but I feel you get a good feel for somebody, you know, if you believe them or not, what they're saying. So I think,
well, what's an example of a question you might ask?
So the one gentleman, I asked him straight up. He was talking about, he says, well, give me any question you got, go ahead. And I said, have you ever cheated on anyone that you've been in a committed relationship with? And he said, yes, he did, that he had cheated on his wife. And that just, I felt everything in my body, just my heart rate go up, my face get red. He knew right away that that was not something I wanted to hear, but yet I knew. this was something not in line with me. You know, not that you should be held accountable for one mistake that you made for the rest of your life, but at the same time, why would I want to take that risk? You know, unless there was something weighing, you know, like, oh, he's got everything else, just this one thing. I may have been able to look past that and work with him on that. But because there were some other things too, he too was not a healthy man. Mm-hmm. I didn't give him the third date, you know, so right. That type of intention, I guess. Mm-hmm. I want to know that they're a man of integrity. So
yeah. What else would you ask a man to learn? How integritous he is?
Just things about like their, you know, their past relationships. How were things, you know, how did things end? Are you still cordial with that person? You know, that too, you know, the way that they talk about their exes, you know, we all have people that you may not want to ever talk to again, but is that what you're going to say? Like, oh, she was horrible. And, you know, I'm so glad she's out of my life. You know, I always think of, okay, that could be me in 4 months, you know? So it's integrity to be able to think back at one point you cared about this person. So you're going to talk highly of them. So that too is a good indicator for me. And then of course, just their overall, how they feel about their children, what kind of relationship do they have with their friends, with their family, that type of thing. You know, it's, are you true to yourself? And what are, you know, goals and stuff like that too? Do you have goals? Or are you just here hoping to hook up with somebody, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
So you ask their relationship goals and
mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, and what their end goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most people take it very well from my perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's important to know all these things. The way you ask a question can change how somebody answers, and getting examples of things would be probably good for you. Like asking people what they learned since their last relationship ended.
Sure, that makes sense.
Asking what they're looking for that might be different from something they looked for in the past, you know, and then sharing yours, because you want to know that somebody has a growth mindset, that they're learning and growing, that they're not stuck. I've asked people what kind of relationship you're looking for, and they go, I don't know, I guess a girlfriend. Nobody's ever asked me. I'm like, come on. They ask it online in your profile, like on you know, right. On the apps. So yeah, you learn a lot about people, but so much is learned through how they respond to stress, how they respond to your issues. Are they good listeners? All those things. So let's talk about your list a little more. You mentioned kindness before.
How you treat the wait staff and you know, anyone you come in contact with.
And has your back, what does that look like to you?
Just somebody who doesn't need to be told what I need. You know, as far as I'm a very independent person because of, you know, what has happened to me throughout my life. But at the same time, I would love for somebody to be able to come, you know, and like when I'm not feeling well, to like, hey, you know, would you like some soup or do you need me to get you anything? You know what I mean? Because I'm not a type of person who will ask for help. But if you're supplying it without me asking, that's fantastic. That's a very attractive quality to me.
All right, let's address this for a minute.
Okay. I see you got your tweets on that one.
Yes. People are really bad at mind reading. And
yeah, I know.
And asking for help is vulnerable, but mm-hmm. it's also part of the profile of a people pleaser. I do for others, mm-hmm. but I will not ask anyone to do anything for me. And if they love me, they would know.
Right.
And that is a fallacy.
You're right. You're absolutely right. It is part of me not being vulnerable.
Yeah.
To ask for help and then have somebody say no.
No is good information. No is going to tell you if a person can be there and have your back. But if you don't ask, you don't know. And so I want to give that to you for homework.
Okay.
Ask for help.
Ask for help. Don't assume.
Yeah. Always ask for what you want. Okay. Don't assume anything. And that includes coming on time for a date. That includes if somebody offers to take you on a date that you don't want to go on, that you speak up right away and say, thank you so much for suggesting that. That sounds like a wonderful third or fourth date, but not a first date for me. And I would love to meet you for coffee or a walk or a smoothie for a first date. How does that work for you? So it's asking for what you want, not just help, but asking for what you want. And the more you do that from the beginning, the more you're going to be in a relationship with somebody who actually you'll know whether they can provide you with what you want. Interrupting people when they talk too much, asking them if there's anything that they want to know about you, even if they're nervous, but you tolerating and just being the good listener and the nurse and the caring, compassionate person, that works in the hospital, but it, you know, or at the doctor's office, but it doesn't work in relationships because it's two people providing for each other. And you want someone who has your back, you've got to have your back.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. So honesty is going to be something that you're going to see over time. You're going to ask questions. You're going to see if they, you know, if their stories line up, you'll pay attention to that. Somebody who cares about their health and fitness is important to you. That's one of your values. Communication, you said, was one of your values.
Yes.
Most importantly is how you want to feel. How do you want to feel when you're with the right man?
Happy that I'm there with them. I want to have that chemistry that I want to kiss you type feeling, you know, like as opposed to, you know, this past time when I dated with intention, I had so many men, nice men. I just did not have that attraction. I just friendly. That's all. So I definitely want that chemistry to be there. Somebody, you know, I can laugh with and feel safe to be vulnerable, I guess. I'm able to let my walls down, you know, I think that's what I want.
Let's talk about safety because that's a big one. Safe to be vulnerable, and vulnerabilities come up a lot today. So let's focus on that. In order to feel safe to be vulnerable, who does he have to be?
I'm not sure, to be honest. In my past, I trusted these men that were not faithful or whatever happened in each one. So it's hard. I think each one, I put up a little bit more of a defense. Like you're going to get to right here. And I don't know yet. I guess that's something definitely I need to work on, is what makes a man worthy enough to have my walls come down for them.
In order to trust, certain things have to be there, right? Not 100 chances, but certain things have to be there. So words and actions have to match.
Correct.
He does what he says he's going to do. He shows up. He is there for you. He, when you make a request, which you haven't done a lot of lately, but when you make a request, he is able to either meet your request or tell you what he can do instead, right? These are ways that partnerships are developed slowly over time.
Right.
Safety and trust have to be earned. Stories have to be earned. Our stories about our past, about the hard things in our lives, we don't share them right away because that's a boundary crossing. And when somebody shares with us all of the hard, deeper, darker secrets and their illnesses and everything on the first date, that's a boundary crossing. It's too much too soon. And so we don't trust people who do that. That for me would be a deal breaker. Like, you're telling me too much. You're identifying with your illness. You're identifying with a victim mindset. No, this is who you are. That's fine. And I'm going to walk away. And so being more true to you and having your back, you have your back, right? So what do I need to have my back? I need to be more discerning. You're dating with discernment, but even more. So increasing discernment looks like I don't trust people until they've earned my trust. I don't share my body, my stories, my deeper, darker secrets, my goodwill, my meals, my things that I make and want to give them and shower them with gifts and do all these nice things. They have to earn that. They have to show me that they're investing in the relationship, in their with time, with money, with actions. These are all ways that we learn to trust people. Consistency over time.
Okay, makes sense.
You date somebody a few times, you decide, okay, this person's already told me something, that's they're off the list. Goodbye. No more chances. Right? I am not turned on at all. No more chances. Like I am turned off. No more chances. They've lied to me because what they said last time and this time don't line up. They don't have a good relationship with their children. No more chances. They are already showing me they have poor boundaries. No more chances. So you're going to give less chances and you're also going to not abandon yourself. So whatever you want from a man, you've got to take care of for yourself. You've got to have your own back. You have to improve your communication. It means you have to ask for help. You have to speak up. You have to set boundaries. You have to let men know this doesn't work for me. Really nice to meet you. I'm going to move on. Or if something happens and you've been dating for a bit, you bring up the issue the minute it happens. Somebody starts communicating with you less often, you bring it up.
Yeah, that is something that I've been working on.
Good. Tell me what you are taking away so far, because I've shared a lot with you.
Lots, yes. Well, I have lots to work on. And here I thought I've been in therapy for 5.5 years. I should be good to go. But clearly there's still, of course, making sure that I have my own back and making some clear values, what I'm expecting out of men that I want to date, being more specific with some of that. Well, there's quite a bit, you know, as far as with the trust and mistrust and the fear of abandonment and emotional deprivation and stuff like that. Those are all things that I can work on, you know, that are tangible things that I can do. Lots to work on. That's good. That's all good stuff. Who would have ever thought that finding your love is so hard? I mean, I just, it's blows me away at times, but it will be worth it, I hope, in the end.
So I'd like to reframe this a little bit. I don't believe that this is just about finding a partner. I believe this is about finding ourselves, finding the parts of ourselves that we've abandoned, the parts of ourselves that are wounded. And those parts are going to benefit us no matter whether we find a partner or not. We will be more in alignment with who we really are meant to be, with our true selves, and that will change every relationship you have at work, at home, with your children, with your parents. You'll have probably less people in your life who are very close to you, but you'll have more honest, open relationships because you will have accessed your true nature, not the nature of you that adapted as a little you, little Beth, adapted to survive. And now it's all about thriving. So to me, this is raising awareness and knowing the steps to take. It's a clear path to a more joyous life, you know, no matter what happens.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, thank you. Your homework is to start speaking up more, asking for help. Don't assume things about people. Ask more clarifying questions even, you know, really be more specific about what you need and want in a partner, and work on those tendencies, the core limiting beliefs where you find yourself fearing abandonment, fearing rejection, distrusting, subjugating, and ask yourself, like, what am I doing because of these core limiting beliefs? How am I coping, and how can I What can I do differently? It's just really, really important to do this work, and it'll change everything. You'll have less doubt about whether you left the right partner, and know that there are other people out there. You know, your body was telling you this wasn't the right fit, whether it's his weight or something else. It sounds like it was not just the fact that he was a bigger person, but something else was there and something was missing for you. And the more you do this work, the more clarity you'll have that this is working, okay. This isn't, and here's why.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Sandy.
I really appreciate you coming on the show and
thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you. It's been very helpful.
My pleasure. I'm glad it was helpful. And yeah. To our listeners, thank you so much for listening. And if you love our show, please give us a high rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with your friends if you think they will benefit. Follow the show. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple, wherever you find podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date. If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.